All right, Treacle.
People keep asking if I'm back, and I haven't really had an answer. But now, yeah, I'm thinking I'm back.
Honestly, during the game, I didn't see it.
Hello, and welcome back to From the Whole Square to Where. Happy 2020, everyone. I hope it's not too late to say that. He's always a bit of a cut-off date, and I always think it's around this sort of time, so probably just got it in the right sort of time to wish everyone Happy New Year. I'm joined by Ryan and Stan. How are you doing, fellas? Did you hope you had a good Christmas, both of you?
Yeah, all good here in Vancouver, so Happy New Year to everyone.
Thank you again.
Yeah,
same. How are you, Ryan?
Yeah, same, you can't complain.
Obviously, did you have a good Christmas?
Yeah, I had a good Christmas. Obviously, other people we know of, their friends and family didn't have such a good Christmas. But yeah, myself personally, yeah, I can't complain. New Year, yeah.
Good. Excellent. Well, there's a lot's happened with the Arsenal over the last couple of weeks since I've last did a podcast. And, I think it's all been brilliant, to be perfectly honest. I don't think there's any reason to be in a bad mood with regards to the football club at the moment, is there? It's all been going really, really well. I think it's far exceeded my expectations when all talk of Arteta started. I had my reservations beforehand, but since the first initial interview and what's happened since, I just think it's, as far as I'm concerned, it's just been getting better and better as each match progresses, really. So we can go through, really, because obviously I know that it's probably all been done to death since I last did a podcast with all the other podcasts that have been going on out there. But just in a nutshell, we'll start with you, Stan. I mean, there's been four games since Arteta took over. Just give us your brief sort of thoughts on how it's progressed so far.
I'm really enjoying how it's all been unfolding, you know, from the appointment, from the press conferences, to the response that I've seen in the matches, the four games that he's been in charge of, to what the players are also saying when they're being interviewed and they're putting their little tidbits out through their PR people, even to what I'm hearing about what could be potentially happening in the transfer window. As I say, I'm enjoying the way it's unfolding. I just want to sit back now to the end of the season and see how it all unfolds. And I'm really interested to see, you know, when you've got all of the players back, a lot of these young players coming through, watching their game improve, you know, as we get towards the end of the season. I'm really enjoying it.
Absolutely. And I can't quite get my breath really over how things have changed on the pitch since he took over in such a short space of time as well. And it does back up a lot of what a lot of us were saying during the Emery reign, that that how he was going wrong, you know, playing people in the wrong positions, etc., etc. And that if someone that actually had a clue what they were doing did come in, it wouldn't take too much to actually change the results on the pitch. But like I said earlier, I think it's what he has done has far exceeded any kind of expectations or hopes that I had initially as well. What about you, Ryan?
Yeah, the same. Like the four games since he officially came, because obviously the Everton game, him and Ancelotti both sat in the stands. Bournemouth, we saw slight improvement. We just weren't taking our chances. On another day, take our chances, we would have won that another day. But then the Chelsea game came along. Yes, we lost it for the last 7 minutes of concentration levels dropping. But the performance itself for the 83 minutes up till then, you couldn't fault any of the players to a man. No. Ozil's been in every game, Ozil was actually doing everything Emery was asking or claiming that Ozil wasn't doing in the first place, which was tracking back, making tackles, getting involved. Ozil's doing that now under Arteta. So, no, you said playing your best pace in their best position. They're going to buy into your, they all buy into your ideas, and we are seeing the best out of them now. And yeah, we had a little blip on Monday night in the first half against Leeds. But what I liked to hear was not only what Arteta had to say, what Lacazette had to say, match day captain. That at half time he came in and bollocked us for that performance in the first half. Because apparently he said before the match, he was saying to him, don't do what you normally do and take these teams lightly, because they will come at us. They're the top of the championship for a reason. And they did take him lightly. He didn't like it. He put in certain words how impressed he was. And suddenly, second half, they came out. It was a different Arsenal we saw compared to the first half. It was like the Arsenal we saw against Man United. We're attacking with intent. Every attack, we looked threatening all of a sudden. And also, defensively, I don't know about you guys, but defensively, apart from that 7 minutes against Chelsea, we've actually looked a bit more solidified, shall we say. We've got two clean... When was the last time we had two back-to-back clean sheets at all?
It's been a long time, isn't it? A very, very long time. I just think... I went on the excellent Arse Brothers podcast not too long ago. It was about whether the squad that we have is top four quality. And I said, this is before, you know, I think Emery was still in charge at the time. And I said, well, I've never changed my mind on that. I think after the summer and the players we brought in and players that left, I still think that the quality of the squad is good enough. It's just the fact that we're being coached terribly. In fact, or whether we're being coached at all, because we've gone downwards rather than upwards since Emery joined. And I mean, my God, it just shows you what you can do with good coaching, with players that we thought we would have to get rid of, most of them, didn't we? Not too long ago, we thought, well, God, literally going to have to burn it down and start again. And it just shows you that we have had good players all along. I'm not saying we don't need new players. Of course we do, but the players we have are not bad, you know. And it's... Arteta's actually cope with a lot of more injuries as well, especially in defence. And, you know, having... Who would have thought a few weeks ago that we'd be having Bukayo Saka at left-back? I mean, just seriously, no one would have even considered it, would they? So, I mean, it's been doing fantastically well. And I think the performances in the league, like you said, Ryan, got better and better every match. And you know what? I was absolutely over the moon with the Leeds game as well, because although the first half, you know, it didn't surprise me what happened in the first half, because Leeds are a fantastic team and Bielsa's a fantastic coach. And I just knew that they would go at us from the off, because they've got nothing to lose and they want to show what they can do to a massive audience on BBC One, as it was over here in the UK. And I wasn't surprised at all. But I tell you what, I put a tweet out after the game and said that I couldn't see any circumstances whatsoever that at any point in the last 2 years, probably longer under Wenger as well, where we would have won that game against Leeds. We wouldn't. I just couldn't see us winning that game at all. I just think we would have capitulated. And... the fact that we did, we rode that storm, you know, after a really tiring Christmas schedule as well, with the squad that we've got, we rode that storm in the first half, came out of it somehow still at 0-0. And the fact that we went on and improved after a half-time team talk under the manager to such an extent that we turned the game completely on its head and we shaded it overall in the second half and won the game. That was just as pleasing to me as the Man United result, to be perfectly honest. I thought it was absolutely amazing that we won that game. It's like an old-fashioned 1-0 to the Arsenal. and it just it pleased me just as much as the Man United win. And I think even in some circumstances, the performance before that against Chelsea was maybe even slightly better than the United one as well. But overall, we just ran out of steam against Chelsea, which showed at the end because of the increased training regime we've got and the way that we're playing now, the pressing game that we've got. The players just ran out of steam, and we've got just about straight through it. But as each game progresses now, with regards to fitness, we're going to get better. And I'm just so excited about the future. I really am. I don't want to wish away this season, but I just can't wait till next season when he's had a whole pre-season as well in charge, and he's really got to know the players for the next 4 or 5 months of the rest of the season. It just it fills me full of excitement. So with this current squad, I'll go to you first again, Stan. What do you think, potentially, realistically as well, I should add, is going to happen this month? Do you really think that we're going to bring in any players?
Yeah, I do. I think that business wasn't really concluded in the summer. They tried to make a late bid, didn't they, for Upamecano? But at that time, RB Leipzig was still sticking to the buyout clause of something around about 70-odd million. With the injury to Callum Chambers, I think they were already going to do something, and that's probably just reinforced it. And I think that we could probably see three players coming in. What I'd like to see of those three would be two centre backs and a midfield player. And I think it's really possible, especially if we can maybe move a couple of players on as well in this window. I mean, if you look at Mkhitaryan, a bid's coming from Roma that we've turned down for 10 million. Maybe they will come back. I would have taken the 10 million myself because we got him for nothing, didn't we? And he's on a wage of around about 200 grand.
I would have as well.
Around 200 grand a week. So if we can get that off the wage side of things, you know, that's another 200 grand there. And looking at the rumours, you know, a lot of people online, and I even said it as well, you know, would you take Boateng or would you take Upamecano? But then when I thought about it, I thought, well, I know we're not playing Football Manager, but realistically, you could get both. You could get Boateng on a loan deal and cover his wages if you get rid of someone like Mkhitaryan and an Elneny and maybe a Mustafi. And then you could probably go to RB Leipzig and start negotiations at around about 40, 45 million if he's not going to re-sign, and see where you go from there. So it could be possible to bring in two centre-backs. And I think that would be... I think that would do us the world of good if we could bring in two in the back with what we already have as well.
I think alongside Upamecano, I think Boateng would be good for a 6-month deal, just to cover, like you said, to cover Callum Chambers. And his experience would be more invaluable, really. But can you really see Upamecano leaving Leipzig when they're still in the Champions League and they're going for the title?
Yeah, I've had that question asked to me, but sometimes you have to look at, there's a bigger picture here, and sometimes a younger player in a team like RB Leipzig can be sold on a rebuild, which is what we're doing at the moment. It might be tempting to stay there, but if he sees a future at Arsenal, I mean, there's a reason that he doesn't want to re-sign his contract. You know, you got to look at, look at Harry Maguire leaving Leicester to go to Man United. I know, as a stature, Man United are a bigger team, but Leicester, you know, they'd come off the back of winning the league. He didn't want to stay around. He decided to go to Man United because they obviously sold him on a rebuild project. And maybe we can do the same with an Upamecano.
Slightly different, though. When he joined in the summer, he didn't really know that they were going to be, you know, doing quite so well this season, I suppose. And I don't know, to me, in his position, when he's only 21, if I was him, I mean, everyone's different. But I would think, people want me now, but they're still going to want me in July. And I might even be able to get more money being a league winner, when the summer comes as well. And with the chance of some silverware when you're 21 winning a league, I might think, well, yeah, I do want to go, but if I wait 6 months, I'm still going to be able to go, and I might even be able to get a bigger wage. I don't know. I don't know. It's going to be a tough one to get him out, but I totally understand what you're saying, and it's a possibility.
That really comes to Uthman Karma. I do have a real soft spot for him, so a lot of what I say about him is all thinking as well. When I lived in Amsterdam, I used to watch quite a variety of football through an app that I had, and I have seen RB Leipzig play a few times, and I've known about him for probably about 2.5-3 years now. As opposed to William Saliba, when we got linked to William Saliba, I never heard of the guy, and I still don't really know that much about him apart from what I've seen, you know, looking up clips and such like. But I've really got a soft spot for Upamecano Carmo, so I'm a little bit biased when I talk about him. I really want to get him in.
He looks the business, and I can't remember which podcast I was listening to, whether it was the Arsenal Vision or the Arse blog today, where they talked about him, and the possibility of him linking up with Saliba, who potentially they could be the new France centre-back pairing for the next quite a few years as well. But the way it came across was that they'd complement each other really well, because Saliba being 6'4", but Upamecano being 6'1", 6'2", and the way that they play... I don't know, the way they explained it and the different styles would really complement each other, and I don't know, I'm just really reluctant to get excited about that, because I'd love him to come in, and he looks like and sounds like exactly the type of player that we need. He reminds me a bit of Sol Campbell from what I have seen, not quite as tall, but yeah, I just think he's a big powerful lad, and it'd be very exciting. I haven't seen this being linked with anyone else other than Boateng. So about you, Ryan? I'm on top. When I said that, I mean centre back wise, sort of real concrete links. So yeah, what do you think about this month, realistically?
Just going back to the Leipzig guy at Leipzig, because what's he got, a year and a half left on his current contract?
Yeah, 18 months. Yeah.
It might be a thing where we can agree a deal with Leipzig where they can have him for the rest of the season, if worst case. But we agree a deal now of the value of what the contract is now. Because obviously they don't want to, in their situation, they don't want, if he's not going to sign a new contract as well, come June, summer, they're going to be in a situation where Tottenham are in now, with a player refusing to sign a new deal. And... they could risk losing money, so they can sell him to someone. You'd think business wise they'd want to get some money for him. Again, like you said about Boateng, apart from Upamecano and Boateng, I haven't really heard anyone else be linked with.
No, I don't think it's going to be a problem for the club. I think Leipzig would be more than happy to sell him personally, because that's their business model, the Red Bull model. That's what they do. They get young players and sell them on, don't they? That is how they make their money. So I don't think it's going to be too much of an issue for them. I think it, more than anything, it's him. And don't forget, he's working, who's the guy he's being managed by, is Nagelsmann. That's going to be a wrench for him. I know we're Arsenal and they are Leipzig, and there's no comparison club-wise. But when you're working under Nagelsmann and you've got the chance of, you know, winning the title, it's going to be tough. So I don't think it's going to be a walk in the park. But under normal circumstances, I think that what you said, Roy, would be perfectly acceptable in doing another, what we did with Saliba, buy him and loan him back. However, we're desperate. You know, only way that could work is if we get buy him and then get a couple more on loan. But how realistic is that to get two good quality centre backs on loan?
And that's the thing, we don't know Arsenal's actual target, because they're so secretive. We don't know all their targets. All we know is that Arteta's come out and said as well, there's a few players we've got in mind. If and when it gets done, we'll let you know. But obviously, apart from Boateng, that's been leaked out, and obviously the guy from Leipzig, I'm not going to try to pronounce his name, from when we tried to get him in the summer, apart from them two, the media can't get hold of any names. And to one extent I like that, because it keeps everything hush hush. It just keeps, and it gets, let's ask, let's board get on with doing their business. Because we've seen with lots of in the past, with lots of Pepe, as soon as we're linked with someone, it gets leaked out, our fan base goes into absolute meltdown, like super glued to the TV or whatever. And then if it falls through, it would all kick off, and then our fan base would actually have an absolute meltdown over it. So in that respect, I'm happy everything's hush hush at the moment.
Go on, Stan.
There was another one that I saw as well that we're being linked again with Thomas Lamar on a loan deal.
A winger, yeah, the left winger.
Yeah, the one that we nearly spent 90 million on. Do you remember that?
Yeah. It fell through the last day, by all accounts.
Yeah,
but he hasn't pulled up any trees, is he? I hope we don't. I'd rather stick with
what we got.
I don't want him to block the path for Martinelli and Saka, to be honest, because I'm really happy with those two. They're very exciting and they're perfect to rotate. I can't see the point in that whatsoever, but we are Arsenal and we'll probably go and buy him and another striker or something. You know, that's the way we do it. But do you know what hasn't done us any favours, though, is the Callum Chambers injury. It's terrible anyway, but the timing of that is ridiculous, because that everyone knows now we're even more desperate for a defender, and that's going to push the prices up by another, you know, 10-20% easy, isn't it? That's so Arsenal, that is. So Arsenal to lose another defender to an ACL just before the January window. But it could have been worse. It could have been after the January window, I suppose. But it's just typical. Price-wise, we're going to be screwed.
It's such a shame, because he was doing so well as well.
Oh, yeah, mate. Honestly, I feel so sorry for him. I do, and well, real sorry for all of us, because he was our best defender for the majority of the season, wasn't he?
Yeah,
playing his heart out. But
yeah, it's like he came back from the loan spell for Fulham, and he's like, with obviously Emery still at the club at the time, wanted to prove a point to Emery, and obviously then Nürnberger and now Arteta down full time. He wants to maintain that. ACL. What is it for Arsenal in the last year of ACLs?
People are going on about the way, you know, we've got to really have a serious look at our medical team and all that. ACLs, that ain't nothing to do with that, really. It's nothing but bad luck.
It's just literally pot luck if it happens or not. When it comes to Arsenal, the last 12 months, though, three of our defenders.
I know, it's just purely bad luck. I reckon,
typical Arsenal, though, it happened to Arsenal players, though. No one else. No, don't be silly.
I don't know whether you've listened to any of the special podcasts that the Ars blog have put out and the Arsenal Vision have put out about the banter decade we've just come through and all the stuff that's happened to us during this decade and the things that you forget. And some of it is just pure ridiculous, and it only would happen to Arsenal, you know. It's things that have never happened in football before, you know, it's only ever happened to us, you know, like a player being arrested or going into White Hart Lane with a knuckle duster in his pocket and being banged up, you know. Traore, yeah. And a player like Kieran Gibbs being sent off when it was a mistaken identity that's never happened before, with him and Oxlade-Chamberlain and all this sort of stuff.
not being able to take Mkhitaryan to a game because of war zones.
Oh, mate. It's beyond a joke, really, isn't it? But that's Arsenal. That is Arsenal. It's the way things happen. But we've got Palace coming up, and under normal circumstances, they're our bogey team. I'd be really worried coming up against Palace away. But the way we're playing, and I'm not worried about playing anyone now. And it's ridiculous so quickly, but it's a good time now because they're full of injuries, and apparently Zaha's a doubt as well. And I think they've got 11 injuries coming up this weekend.
Well, I think he's made himself a move, isn't he? He's new agent, so.
Well, yeah. I mean, I'm really confident about winning that.
This is something Arteta's done at Arsenal in the space of what, just under 3-4 weeks. He's
mad.
He came into this club.
Well, 2 weeks ago, wasn't it? 2 weeks.
Yeah. The fans were in disarray. The club was in disarray. Players weren't playing like to their full potential. he's coming straight within 10 seconds of his first interview. He's got everyone on side. The players are playing for the club, for the badge. And another thing that I've liked, home or away, that hasn't been done for a long time, is at the full-time whistle. He's not going down the tunnel. He's literally on the pitch. Everyone knows you stay on the pitch, go over to your fans, if you're away, thank you fans. Even at home, middle of the pitch, well done, well done, well done. They're going to thank the fans. And again, that's something the fans appreciate as well. And that's good, another feel good factor in being the stadium itself. I mean, the fan base as well, because it's then shown that he cares. And then it's because he cares and the players are doing that, it's showing that they care as well, that they do actually give a crap about what the state of this club is in. And what, exactly. I find refreshing as well is the honesty of, like, what was it, the David Luiz Socrates interview after May 9th? The honesty about the fitness level, so for what he wants from us, we're not that fit yet, but we're working as hard as we can. And look, as long as you, we don't expect to win every game, but as long as you give 110% for the 90 minutes, we won't complain.
Exactly. Well, I said, but we bought Louise, you know, straight away. I was on the podcast that day, I think, or maybe the day after, but I said about how pleased I was when we signed Louise and the fact that he'd be a good captaincy candidate. And I was laughed off the face of the planet at the time. And I said, well, I've said all season, I like Louise, and he's not a bad defender. He just don't turn into a bad defender just by making a move across the city. And the fact was that it was just, again, you know, down to the fact that how we were playing at that time, and he's no protection. We were completely open and allowing every opposition to run straight at us and just pepper the goal with shots. And I said, just look what's happened with Luis. He's looked like a man mounting the last two or three games. It's looked fantastic. And I'm not saying he's the best defender in the world. And yes, he's still, you know, culpable for mistakes every now and then. But I don't know a defender in the world that isn't. And yeah, I mean, it's just fantastic. And the whole team, I don't think you can question the commitment and the play of anyone in this who's played under Arteta so far, can you? It's just nothing short of a Christmas miracle. I just expect him to walk out with Tiny Tim and like give him some faith healing and get him to walk again on the pitch or something, you know, some cripple kid. But I wouldn't put it past him.
What I enjoyed at the beginning of the games now, I was late for the kickoff for the Leeds game, so I didn't see if they did it. But the previous two games, the players were doing the huddle. Did I do that in the beginning of the Leeds game as well?
I don't know. I missed. I didn't see that.
Because what I noticed was when I done it for the Man U game, the footage that we were watching, they kind of zoomed in on the huddle, and the one player that was doing all of the talking, it wasn't Aubameyang, the captain, and it wasn't Xhaka, the previous captain. It was David Luiz. Yeah. He was doing all of the talking in the huddle, and he had everybody's attention, and that was really good to see.
Yeah, exactly. I've seen it all.
He's not a secret captain.
He is. He's been the captain all season on the pitch. Yeah. I'm not exaggerating.
And when Saka came on for left back in the Man United game near the end, he's the one there when they're defending, talking to him, directing him, like, getting that position, cover that person, doesn't it? And even turning towards the fan base and like G'ing them up, but like, really up near the end, trying to get the atmosphere even higher than what it was. Things like that.
He's been doing that all season, though, and people ain't noticed because they're just been blinkered and saying, no, shit, you know, he's the worst signing we've ever had, blah, blah, blah. I've seen him do it since the first game he played. And
because he's signed from Chelsea, because of his age, so they write him off. Yeah, you know, everyone makes mistakes at the end of the day. No player is perfect, no matter what position they play. Everyone makes mistakes.
We could have had Virgil van Dijk under Emery in our team, and he would have been making mistakes, and he would have looked like half the player than he is because of it's literally like open season, wasn't it, with the opposition in our half of the pitch, and anyone would panic under that kind of intense scrutiny, to be perfectly honest.
Come in, and he sorted out the bench. He chose his first choice midfield pairing, which is Torreira and Xhaka. That's the strongest pairing he's got.
Torreira, Xhaka. So, sorry, go on.
Literally, it's like we look so much more comfortable, so to speak. I say this now, touch wood. When the opposition coming to attack us, we actually look solid for once. It's like this organisation. If one's staying back, one will get pushed forward a bit more, be a bit more involved in the attack as well. If necessary, they'll team up together. There's always someone protecting that back four now.
I know. Well,
that's after I said it, because you've seen it in footage as well. He's drilling him. He's saying, first off, no, I was not happy. I saw two Arsenals. First off, I didn't like. He let him know, because he did, as I said before, he did say, Leeds will come at us. We need to be fully on it from the get-go. As you said before, earlier on, in years gone by, in that sort of situation, we would not have gone on to win that game. We would not have got battered in the second half. Nothing would have changed, sort of thing. Whereas he's come in, because he pre-warned them, this, that and the other, and they're buying into it. So they're upping their levels. They're giving him the respect that, I wouldn't say deserve, but he demands. The levels, the intensity he demands from these players, they're then giving it to him.
I know. I think it was the Man United game where he was interviewed before the game, and he said, was asked the question, are you going to play with the same intensity, or do you expect the players to play with the same intensity as they did against Man United? It's words to this effect, and I can't quote it exactly, but he said, no, that's it's not going to be like that for this game. It's going to be like that for every game. And it's amazing. It's just so... I don't think he's just doing it on purpose either. He's literally, that's the way he is. It's like, it's almost as if he's literally trying to say everything that we want to hear. But it's not. That's the way he is. And it's just so bloody brilliant, because we've been waiting for this for, well, the best part of 2 decades. We haven't had any kind of...
The way he talks of it as well is what he was expected of as a player when he was playing for Arsenal.
Was it? But under Wenger, there was. That's what I mean.
It wasn't shown, but maybe because of that era where he obviously played for Everton, he's watched the great Arsenal teams before then, the Invincibles and all that. He's witnessed. He knows what it is. He knows what it means to play good football at Arsenal and what the standards that were set in the early noughties. And he's taken it on, and maybe working under Pep, it's worked wonders, because he took a little bit of knowledge from there as well. Because the way he dresses as well is pretty much hair aside. He's even growing a beard now, like Pep.
Yeah, well, he looks really cool actually. Apart from, he can even sort of stand his Lego hair, because he does look pretty cool. But what I liked as well, because I can't remember which podcast I was on, but I was talking earlier on in the season about missing certain aspects of the Arsenal of old, you know, under George Graham, the Highbury, how much I missed Highbury, and the class of the club. I was talking about that, and I said, I semi-joked, but I wasn't really joking, but I semi-joked at the time, but I missed the players turning up for the match in their suits. You know, they had the old emblem on their jackets, and they looked really smart coming into he's got them doing that, hasn't he? I mean, they haven't got the ties on, but they're all, have you noticed, when they all turn up at the stadium, they're in suits. They're all in matching club suits. And I mean, just a little something like that. I love it, because one of the things in his initial interview, and he said, I just want teams that are coming to the Emirates to play us, when they're turning up in their coach and they see the Emirates, I want them to have that fear of coming to the stadium again. And yeah, that's exactly what I really wanted to hear, because our home should be, you know, our fortress. And we've not had that feeling for such a long time, have we? And we haven't had any discipline within the club for, like I said earlier, about best part of 2 decades. And we've had a fantastic period during that time, but I think under Wenger, they were pretty much allowed to do whatever they wanted. And and get away with it and play the next game. And that era has come to an end, but it's the looks of it.
Just coming off the back of what you were saying there, Mikel Arteta saying that, you know, this is how I want us to play in every game. Mm. I can imagine that was probably why he was so angry with the team or made a point at half time, because it sounds a bit cliche, but the game against Leeds, it really was a game of two halves. And if you look at that first half, it was almost like the team had forgotten everything that Mikel Arteta had told them, and they just reverted back to everything that Emery had told them.
Mm.
If you look at the stats in the first half, you know, it was the same as all of the games under Emery. Everybody was playing so deep in that first half. We were almost causing problems for ourselves by trying to get the ball out from the back. I mean, there were times when it almost looked like David Luiz was trying to get into a centre-back pairing with the goalkeeper. That's how deep they were. And when they came out for the second half, it looked like the players had just moved up at the pitch, maybe just a few more feet, to give themselves more space, and it worked. And I think he must have gone, if you're training the players this week, I would sit them down and I would show them those two halves and show them everything that they did wrong in that first half, but then complement that by showing them how they improved and everything that they did right compared to the things that they did in that first half. Because, I mean, just the way that they were receiving the ball, when the midfield just wasn't working at all in the first half for me at all. I thought it was terrible and quite languid. They were doing that thing where it's either you either press or you don't press. Don't do that thing that's in between of like you're jogging in sort of no man's land and you're not doing one or the other. And that's been the problem, I think, under Emery for most of his tenure. But when they came out in the second half, they went back to doing everything that they've done in the Man United game and the Chelsea game. And that's what they've got to do. They've got to understand that they've got to keep on applying and doing it for the whole of the 90 minutes. And that's going to come with time. You know, it's about repetition. The more they train with Mikel Arteta, the more games they play, the more repetition, it will come naturally. But you could definitely see for me in that first half that they were kind of slipping back into the Emery way of playing football, which I didn't like at all.
Well, what was... talking about earlier about how happy I was with that game and the win, what I forgot to mention, which is the most important part of it really, what even was pleasing about that was the way that they reacted to his halftime team talk clearly. And it immediately makes me think of the Europa Cup final, and we went into that halftime in the Europa League slightly ahead on points against Chelsea. I reckon we was just slightly shaded that first half. We went in as a slightly the better team, and we'll come out and within a minute or two we lost the goal immediately, and we just completely capitulated. And I said, I was ranting at the time on the podcast and saying, you know, this is why you spend the money to get the best coaches in, to this is where they really earn that money. In the half time, in a major European final, and they whatever they do then is the difference of between losing or winning a game like that. And what the hell must have Emery said to them during that half time team talk, where we go in as a slightly better team and we come out and lose 4-1? And I was just infuriated, because that's why you that is not earning your 8 million quid a year or whatever he was on. So that's why I was so delighted that we won that FA Cup match against Leeds, because we were just appalling that first half. Yeah. And the way that we transformed the team by his halftime team talk was just brilliant to me. Absolutely brilliant. And it wasn't the best game to watch, no, but it was probably one of my favourite wins for a long time, just because of that.
And, I've got visions of him going prime John Sitton now in the half time. Yeah. telling players to bring their dinner with them.
Yeah, no, exactly. But I mean, whatever he said, whatever he did, I didn't mean, well, he didn't mean it, but I was just about to break into song. But no, I was very happy, because we need that. We've needed that in this club for so long. And that's why I was really pleased about it.
And if he has got a nasty side to him, I'm glad that the players got to see it early on in his tenure. You know, that we've not been on a long run and everything's been all hunky-dory. And then when they don't pull their socks up, then he kind of loses it a little bit with them and everyone's a bit shocked. I'm glad that it's happened early So players kind of, they know now what the boundaries are, right? They know now, you know, how far that this guy's going to sort of like let things go.
Yeah, exactly. Well, Terry, one of my favourite question asker, Terry Mancini. I don't know if you can see, you've got the comments on your screen.
Yeah.
Do you think we should do a re-sign Giroud? Would give us another option, and he's so slow he can play until he's 70. The idea of an old age pensioner scoring against Tottenham excites me, and Wayne Rooney. And then he's got Mikel has been fantastic, makes me feel sorry for Emery. Despite spending thousands on Greece in 2000 and teeth whitening products, you find out your ex is dating Brad Pitt. So, exactly. Well, I reckon he probably got those on expenses as well, which makes me even more angry with him, to be perfectly honest. But one thing that annoyed me about the match was on Twitter afterwards, that people, I saw not one, not two, but quite a lot of people slating Rob Holding and calling him out, saying he's shit, we need to get rid of him, blah, 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 blah. And that really annoyed me because this guy has been out for a year, you know, and he makes his comeback in a game like that, which is probably, that was probably a bad decision, but I don't think we had much choice, did we? You know, in who we played. We had no one else to play, so he played, but that was
probably the game as well.
Well, against that team, you know, Leeds, I just knew what was going to happen in that game. And it was almost like standing in a hailstorm in a force 10 wind with a hail blowing in your face. That's what it must have been like with those Leeds players running at him all the time. And the rest of the players weren't supporting him in the first half either, were they? And a couple of the passes that he made were bad. I know that. He had bad distribution on the night. But again, you know, he's a human being. He's a young player with a lot of potential, which I think is going to be, if he can stay around under Arteta, I think he's got a massive chance of being a real good class player because he's got all the attributes. But it's his first game back pretty much in a year, and just to slate him like that and write him off really pissed me off because, you know, he can see that he can just watch a player and the way that he played to tell that he's got a lot of the right attributes and he's going to come good. So give the guy a chance, and that really annoyed me. I don't know what you guys thought. Yes, he didn't have the best of games, but at the end of the day, he got through that game unscathed, and we had a clean sheet, fair play, and I think he did all right in the end. So what do you guys think?
I've got a quick one for that. I think our fans are very, very fickle. They don't understand, about being patient. And I say that in the same way that our fans, I say a section of the fans, as you say, were slating Rob Holding for maybe having an average game after coming back from a long injury, is in the same way that a section of our fans will hail Mesut Ozil as the second coming for being able to string together two okay games. That's how I look at it. Patience, do you know what I mean? I want to see what Mesut Ozil's doing in 10 games' time, and I want to see what Rob Holding's doing after he's made himself come back and he's getting in the team regular. You know, we shouldn't be too quick to judge sometimes.
Yeah, some other guys were saying that he needs to go out on a loan, but I don't agree. I really genuinely think he needs to be in and around a squad, and he needs to be in working with Arteta and his coaches to really get him prepared for next season as well, and then obviously play when necessary, because we are probably going to need him as well. So I really think he needs to finish off his rehabilitation with us and help us out whenever he can in the meantime. But I really do have high hopes for him. There's a lot of players now I have a lot of high hopes for. And another one I want to talk about as well is, which I can't wait to see him back in the team, is Danny Ceballos. He's one that I've got a lot of time for. I think under Arteta, I mean, with his guidance and the way that it's clearly improving players. Obviously, what he did at City and what he's done so far with us. He could really go places, Danny Ceballos, with that guidance and that coaching. And I really hope we can work out a deal for him to stay, because we've seen what he can do in flashes. But I think he's got a really high ceiling, I do. So, yeah, I really just hope we can work out a deal with Real Madrid and we can keep him on. Hopefully he might play on the weekend. We never know. But Ryan, what do you think, Ryan, on him? Because he's been written off and forgotten about by a lot of our fans already as well.
Well, it's like you said, but you both said before, our fan base is so fickle, it's unbelievable. But Mustafi could have, for example, Mustafi got slated, we're going to get slated for Chelsea goal, the winning goal. But if he'd made a tackle or whatever, he's the best thing since sliced bread, also given, they praise him up, and Johnny makes his next mistake. So, yeah, it's like. It's like the same for anyone. Aubameyang could go for a dry spell for not scoring goals. Oh, that's it. Get rid of him. He doesn't want to be here. And then when the media leak out rubbish about him wanting to leave, he's having to come at himself. No, that's absolute rubbish. I'm happy here. But until he says that, he's not saying nothing. It's true. This is the same media that have been done for so many bad things in the last 25 plus years. Themselves, but our fan base is so it's on black and white. It must be true. I'm sick of
it's infuriating.
One thing about our fan base, I'm sick of. We just believe anything.
I know
it's in the paper. It's true. Media says it's true. Again, and also Sky Sports. In the same segment. The same person says, "No, we're not looking to sign no one." Da 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 da. Like Arsenal not looking to sign no one, but they're looking at Boateng, and there's conferences back and forth. It's what is it? What you cut? They're covering their tracks now. It's does my fucking load here.
Because I haven't seen anything in from anyone specific about this Boateng thing. Where's it actually come from? Who's actually said anything? Is that just speculation from newspapers, or has it come from anyone in particular?
It's the German Sky Sports version of what we have over here that have leaked it to, got wind of it somehow over there, and told the UK correspondents over here, and that's how it's come out.
So that's just a rumour from a media company as well, then? It's nothing concrete at all, is it?
And that's what I'm saying. But literally, 30 seconds prior to that, no Arsenal looking to sign absolutely no one. As far as they're concerned, they spent enough money in the summer. That's it. I'm sorry, Arteta. Anyone that come in, be it Arteta or whoever, would not have took a job knowing that coming in a few weeks' time when the window's open, that they're not going to get back. They're not going to get any backing to improve what they've been walked into.
It's a really difficult month with regards to. We need to be strengthening because with this new way that we're playing, the high press, the way that we are increasing our intensity in the training and everything to be able to do it, we are highly likely to have a big slump in the spring, and we're bound to sort of succumb to quite a few injuries because of this as well, muscle injuries, whatever, because we haven't been fit enough. So we do need extra personnel, but I have to say, I've had a complete U-turn on a lot of our players. The big one I really need to apologise to personally is Granit Xhaka, because I've slated Granit Xhaka, and it's unlike me because I don't like to slate players. I don't really go out after certain players, but I've openly said I don't know, why he's at Arsenal, because he doesn't fit the bill. He's no any specific kind of midfielder. He doesn't do anything really for the team, and he needs to move on. But I always give credit where credit's due, and he's been fantastic the last few games. And if he was to go this month, that's going to be a big problem for us, because to replace someone like him is going to cost us an awful lot of money, and it's going to be a gamble. And I think that we really need to, at least till Christmas, we need to keep hold of him. We really do, because he is, without doubt, the best player to play alongside Torreira at the moment. Unless Ceballos can come in and really hit the ground running, which is going to be difficult after an injury he's had, then we need to keep hold of him. And, I need to eat a whole slice of humble pie about what I've said about Granit Xhaka in the the last few weeks, because he's really come good. Really come good, isn't he?
No coincidence, literally just before Arteta was announced, there was rumours of him and Hertha Berlin had negotiations. His agent had come out and said everything's agreed, it's just between the clubs now. Arteta's come in, performances have got better, as you just said, but also that talk has now gone quashed. It was Arteta's come out and said, as far as I'm concerned, he's staying. He ain't going nowhere, he's committed. It's like Arteta's, he's come in, he's seen Xhaka, put an arm around him, had a chat with him one on one, and said, "No, you are wanted here, you are part of my plans. We've got let's build something great here." And the way things have gone, game by game, Xhaka's starting to believe in that. And because Xhaka's given the 110% as well in his performances, and his performances have got to get better in these few games, chain that as well. And yeah, most of us went on there and we were like, "How dare he be well for Palace early on the season?" But also at the same time, anyone that's smart enough will know Emery, to a point, did throw Xhaka under the bus, though, straight from the off.
Oh, absolutely, yeah. He played him out of position.
Anyone that doesn't realise that needs to head test him.
No, he did.
That didn't help things. I think if he feels more protected and wanted, he's more than happy to stay put.
Well, what annoys me is when you hear things like, and I'm not absolutely not saying that he said this at all, but well, actually, I don't know which one it was, whether it was Lacazette or Aubameyang, where they said, "I've got to leave because I want to play in the Champions League." Now, that sort of comment really pisses me off.
I think that was Lacazette said that.
Yeah, I think it was.
Yeah.
That pisses me off more than anything because, well, okay, well, get us there then.
Exactly.
Exactly. Get us there then. You're going to leave us to go to a club to try and qualify for the Champions League. Get us to the fucking Champions League. And but I don't know whether he said that at all. You know, that was just one of these things. Comes out in the media. It might not be true. But that sort of comment really annoys me more than anything coming from a player. And Frank Gunner's just put in the comments, "It pissed me off that some of our own fans are waiting for Arteta to fail. It's ridiculous." Of course. But you can't call yourself a fan if you like that, really. You can't, because you're not a fan. It's a fanatic of Arsenal. You're not that type of person if you are waiting for Arteta to fail. And if you are, then I'd love to know why and how you're not impressed by his start in the job. It's just a joke.
It's my take on the Granit Xhaka situation. I'm not a big fan of Granit Xhaka personally, and I don't think he's been, I've never really thought he's been that much of a player ever since we bought him, to be fair. I have seen some good things that he can do, but I've always thought that he slows the game down a little bit for us. Under Mikel Arteta, I have seen improvement, although what I saw in the first half of the Leeds game, for me, was Granit Xhaka reverting to type. I'm always up for, you know, improvement, and if he does continue with what I've seen over the last few games, then maybe he's got more time at Arsenal. But if Hertha Berlin wanted to drop 40 million euros on him, and again, we don't know how true that is, but let's say that was a true rumour, then I'm all for that, purely on the aspect of upgrading. You know, I always think that if you can upgrade on what you have and take out the sentiment part of it, whether you particularly like a player or you don't like a player, but if you can upgrade, then I'm always one for that. And I think that if you can get 40 million for Granit Xhaka, and maybe put a little bit more on top of that, I think that we would be able to get a much better player for that position on the pitch. If it's about keeping him through sentiment and, "Oh, it's Granit, he's been around the club for a long time," I don't really buy into that, because I don't think he's actually been that good for Arsenal in his Arsenal career, so I wouldn't mind letting him go. But again, just to repeat, if there is some improvement that's going to come, I'm not going to be quick to judge, like I said a moment ago. I'm all up for giving him more time and then making a firmer decision in the summer to see how it all plays out towards the end of the season. I don't mind doing that.
I mean, who are you going to replace him with in the January, though, in order to for that person to settle in and do a, as good a job as him for the rest of this season until May? It's really difficult, Stan, isn't it? I'm totally happy to replace him with a best player.
I agree. But those people that
think we can do that.
I know, but those people that do all of the transfer stuff, who work out contracts and approach clubs, their job doesn't start on the 1st of January. And they don't, you know, and they sit around for the whole year just waiting for the window to open. You've got to think that you're looking at least a couple of months ahead and you're looking at the squad and you're thinking, well, can we get an upgrade on this player? And you start making a shortlist, you start having a contingency plan ready. Well, that's what I'd like to think happens at a club anyway, that you have, you've always got a contingency and you've always got feelers out and you've always got a feeling on whether player X might be open to do something in January or player X might be open to speaking to us now and we can firm up the deal in the summer. So you never know. But as I say, I mean, I'm not his biggest fan. I don't hate the guy. I just think that we could do better. But if there is going to be improvement and he starts to improve his play under Arteta and he's used in a different way and not being deployed solely as our first line of a defensive midfield, then we may get more out of him. And I'm open to it.
He's being played to his strengths under Mikel Arteta, isn't he? Same as every player. Not being asked to do stuff that you're not comfortable doing. Just playing to your strengths. And how many times have we said that under Unai Emery? The players just need to play to their strengths. The team needs to play to its strengths. And yeah, it's amazing what you can do when you actually do that and the changes and differences that it can make. But we slightly went, I'm just going to guide us slightly back to what I was talking about earlier and Danny Ceballos. What would you guys, I mean, I'll go to you first, Ryan. What would you keep? Ceballos?
I'll definitely keep him, yeah, because there is, as we've discussed on my channel and on here before, under the guidance and coaching of Arteta, it could be even a bit better player now that can adapt quicker to the league and
I think he could be the long term replacement for Granit Xhaka, by the way, just to cut in slightly. Apologies.
Well, definitely, and I think there's a deal there to be done with Real Madrid. I think he wants to be here because if he does on these social media and all that, it's all pro Arsenal. For someone who's on loan, and if you want to believe what the media say again, he just wants to use this as a stepping stone to try to get points in Real Madrid. You don't do this. You don't. Everything he's been doing, he wouldn't do. He just wants this as a loan. He don't want this as a full time thing.
I don't agree with that.
His first home game literally got an assist and he celebrated like he scored the World Cup winning goal. Won it for the league or something.
You don't say what he's been saying and act the way he's been acting unless he's an actual actor, you know, who works in Hollywood or something that's been sent over here. But you can't sort of fake that sort of stuff the way that he genuinely feels like he looks like he loves the club. But anyway, that's by the by. I just want to keep him, not only for, you know, the way that he seems to be infectious, you know, personality-wise and everything, but I just genuinely can see a great player inside him. And I think he could be the player that Granit Xhaka wants to be, if you know what I mean. You know, the player to take that ball from the defenders and sort of basically just start moving it up the field. And I think he could fill that role perfectly. But I just hope that he gets a chance under Arteta. Because I can't see anything other than him being the type of player that Arteta would really like to work with. So I just hope he can get back in the team soon and get a chance. But I can't. The difficulty is, where's he going to fit in the team now? Because it's going to be difficult to change the Xhaka and Torreira partnership now, because that looks really strong. And is he going to leave out Mesut Ozil? I don't think so. I don't see Ceballos in that forward number 10 role anyway. I don't think it suits him. I think he's much better, you know, a bit more of a deep line playmaker. So, not like a number 8, but I don't. Who's he going to take the place of? He's not going to take the place of Torreira or Xhaka. So that's what is a bit of a concern, really. And what I wanted to sort of to talk to you guys about. What do you see a future for Ceballos then? And if so, how's he going to show what he can do in the current setup?
My only opinion about Danny Ceballos is that I honestly haven't seen enough of him to make a definitive decision on whether I would say, yeah, we should, you know, make the loan permanent or not. I did see flashes of him in that first home game where, you know, he looked like there was something good there. And then he kind of had a couple of games where he kind of looked a little bit off the boil. And then unfortunately, he's had an injury. So, I mean, he's due back, I think. I saw pictures of him on the training pitch. And I thought it was quite amusing that all of the players looked like they were doing like a guard of honour for him to come onto the pitch. So it's obvious that they hold him in very high regard. Either that or they're just trolling him, who knows. But I'd like to see more of him under Mikel Arteta. And I think I'd like to see him instead of Xhaka, to see what he can do in that role. But keeping him one way or the other, I really couldn't tell you yet.
I think that Arteta's got to like him because of his hair. I mean, his parting is the most sharpest parting you've ever seen in your life.
Yeah, maybe Mikel will see that as competition. Only one person at the club can get the Bill Cream contract.
Well, but, I mean, the Lego guys stick together, though, don't they? Literally.
That's a good one.
Well, I got high hopes really coming forward, like we've touched on earlier with regards to this the next game. Now, I haven't stupidly should have written it down. I'm going to have a look in a second on my phone. The next few matches coming up, but the crazy thing is, and again, I think it was maybe on the Arsecast earlier about top four, and the top four being lava, and the fact that a lot of so-called professional pundits are still saying that Tottenham under Mourinho have got a good chance of getting top four. Believe it or not, that's the case. Now, what I'd love to do is that is actually start the season now.
That's quite funny.
With a little mini league, right? So there's up. So add us, Spurs, United, Chelsea, Wolves. Anyone else that you realistically think could get that last place in the top four? And I'm assuming here that City, clearly Liverpool, City and Leicester are already in the top four. So there's one spot to play for. So if it's us, Spurs, Chelsea, United, Wolves, I think, would you reckon that's realistically it? Is there anyone else? I mean, possibly. I don't think Sheffield United, they're going to get four.
I think that's probably it.
So if we started a mini league from now and we are 9 points behind, so we're starting on a -9 to get top four, because currently that's how far we're behind Chelsea, isn't it? So the mad thing is, if we win against Palace on Saturday and Spurs lose, which they will because they're playing Liverpool, we're going to go equal points with Spurs. We'll actually claw back the deficit already. And it's ridiculous. It's absolutely ridiculous to think that, because not so long ago, they were 6 or 7 points ahead of us. And we've only won that one game against United. But the crazy thing is, it could be the lowest points total since the Champions League started to actually qualify in fourth place, by the looks of it. And so there's a possibility. And if you were Arteta, what do you do at this particular stage? Because loads of people have said the league's gone. The league has gone, and we should concentrate purely on the Europa League and the FA Cup now, and just use basically the Premier League to experiment. But when you're 9 points off, when you're starting a mini league of five teams, only 9 points off the top one, what do you realistically do? Because that, are Chelsea looking particularly strong? I don't think so. You know, how many games have they lost out the last, so many that have played? I don't think it's going to be beyond the realms of possibility that this Arsenal team now, under Arteta, that's improving every single game, Is it going to be beyond the realms of possibility that we can claw back those 9 points? I don't think so. So it's a bit strange, a situation.
We've got to play Chelsea away at the end of the month anyway. So assuming we beat, we win all games like Palace.
So who's there? We've got Palace then?
Palace, we've got Sheffield United.
That's right.
Then Chelsea away. Then we've got the FA Cup match against Bournemouth away. And then Burnley at home. Then Newcastle. I mean, Burnley away, Newcastle at home. And then got that little winter break.
So I don't think there's one game there that we can't win. Mm. Seriously.
Effectively, if we win for the next few weeks between now and Chelsea, we beat Palace on Saturday. We beat Sheffield United at home. And in the meantime, Chelsea dropped points. That points difference is even less than going into that Chelsea game.
So we've got five games.
To be two, 3 points off Chelsea after Chelsea game.
So five league games until that winter break.
Yeah, and then the FA Cup fourth round as well against Bournemouth at the end of the month.
I mean, it's going to be. I mean, this is. I feel stupid almost talking about it, but that is. It's not. It's quite. It's quite believable that we could actually get in the top four, isn't it? Really, when you look at it. I mean, that run of five games, is clearly the Chelsea one is the hardest one. I mean, Sheffield United, very tough. Very tough, but we should be able to beat them at home. Hmm. With renewed confidence that we're the way that we're playing now. We should be able to do it.
What I worry about is, like you said earlier, as we're trying to get the fitness levels up in this team, you know, we're still into cup competitions as well. How long are we going to be able to go before we start seeing, you know, a lot of tight legs? And depending...
That's the basis of my question, Stan, as to what you do really when you're Arteta and how will that really affect this January transfer window, because we do need a bigger squad. And... you know, it's a tough one, really, because do you literally just give up on the top four? What I'm trying to get at is you can't really, can you? You can't really give up on the top four because we're only 9 points off. And the teams that we're battling with are all inconsistent. And they're not improving the way that, hopefully, touch wood, we are improving now under Arteta. I'd say that out of that group of five teams... I mean, I love Sheffield United, the way that they're playing and their manager. It's just phenomenal what they're doing this season. And if he doesn't win the Premier Manager of the League, of the season, I think he should anyway. It'll be Klopp. Out of those five teams, I think that we're the one that, over the medium to long term, we've got the best opportunities of improvement. Personally,
a lot of those teams are suspect to mistakes, aren't they? I mean, look at Wolves. Wolves are playing some really nice football, as is Leicester, but they have had some slip ups as well.
Exactly. I mean, Leicester, I'd still say they're going to get top four because they are very good. They are a very, very good team. I can't see them slipping up too much. But out of all those other five, I can see us quite not comfortably. But I can see us clawing back that 9-point deficit on Chelsea. I really can. So it's a tough one, really. So I do think that we have to get two or three players in this month. I think it's really critical. And if he does, then... that's the other good point, which I've only just thought of, actually. In the summer, when we made these improvements to the squad, and we brought in, five or six players, we were right on the cusp of the 25-man allowance, really, for your squad at that point. We haven't let too many players go. So how would that... I mean, that's got to affect our incomings in January as well. We have to get rid of some players. And I can't see anyone actually leaving, because Mustafi has to go, but who's going to buy him?
I was reading this morning that there was a Turkish team sniffing around him. I can't remember which one, though. Fenerbahce, I think.
I believe it when I see it. I really will.
Again, don't know if it's rumours and that. But, you know, we turned down a bid from Roma for Mkhitaryan, which I think we should have taken, personally.
That would have been perfect. I can't believe that we would have turned that down, really. someone his age.
Yeah.
Well, after 190 grand a week, we should have ripped their arm off, in my opinion.
Yeah.
I mean, I would have actually got rid of him for nothing as long as they took his wages on and got him off, you know, on a permanent basis.
And Elneny, is Elneny on loan or did we sell him?
On loan.
Okay, so we could, you never know, there could be something happening there as well.
AC Milan apparently was were asking around him, but again, you know, media rumours. Yeah, because wow. Edis owes us one, so fucking, you know, get him to buy Elneny off us, that'd be fantastic. But I realistically can't see us selling, unless it's a surprise that comes up.
Yeah, maybe Mavropanos, if someone came in for him.
I'd love to, but...
You know, I mean, not get very much, right? But it's just a space. It frees up a space.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, in an ideal world, we could get, I don't know, say, anywhere between 15 and possibly 20 for Mustafi. I'd be over the moon. Over the moon to make that sort of money back on him. But the problem is, if it is something like Fenerbahce, we just keep continuously shooting ourselves in the foot with the money that we pay these players, because he's on the best part of 100 grand a week, I believe.
Something like that, yeah.
Ballpark figure. He's got to get that somewhere else, isn't he? And will Fenerbahce pay that to him? I don't know. I mean, I can't see it. I think we're stuck with him, and I think we're stuck with all these other players until the end of their contract, because they're not going to... Why would they take a contract somewhere else on far less money? It just don't make sense.
I think they're looking at putting Emil Smith Rowe out on loan as well. So that's another space.
Yeah. I wish we could have seen more of him as well, but I've got high hopes for him, actually.
Yeah.
He hasn't done brilliantly in the first team. I know that. But again, you can see certain things in him as a player.
Well, he's going well, doesn't he?
Yeah, he looks really good. I like him. I do like him. So, yeah, I think that he'd be an ideal candidate for a loan. I don't know what to do with Mavropanos. I don't know. I can't see that he's got the quality to... But I hope to be proved wrong with every player, but I've seen enough of him.
I heard he's having a nightmare in the under-23s, like a terrible time at that level.
He wasn't playing, and that's why I couldn't understand why he got back into the first team on the bench the other week. He was dropped. Steve Ball dropped him. So it's odd. I think that what's his face? Name's gone out of my head. The other young centre back. Thank you. Yeah, he's ahead of him, ability wise and experience wise.
Well, it shows you though, if they've dropped a player like Mavropanos from the under-23s, and then because if we're short in that position, they've called him up and put him on the bench, it just shows you how probably off the pace someone like Zach Medley is, that they didn't use him and put him on the bench, right? That they would go back to someone like Mavropanos and call him back for the bench.
It's odd, isn't it? It's a strange one. I can't quite get my head around it. And we've got that young left-back as well, who has been named in, especially in the squad, who's been training with the first team as well. And I can't remember, his name's gone out of my head as well.
Not that Cohen Bramble or Bramble Cohen.
No, he left in the summer. I can't remember his name. He's quite promising, left back, but he was on standby in the squad, training with the first team over the last couple of weeks because of the problems we've got at that position. I think it'd be an urgent thing for me. If I was in charge of the academy, I'd get all the best possible under-23 players that are defenders, and I would immediately find them a home on loan, because that is exactly what we need from the academy, isn't it? Fullback and centre back.
Of midfielders and forwards that come through the academy, but I can't remember the time I saw a centre back or a fullback come through.
Ashley Cole, probably, isn't it?
Or Kieran Gibbs.
Yeah, that's right. I like Kieran Gibbs. It's a shame. I had high hopes for him as well at that point. But I'll definitely try and get Medley, Mavropanos, and I can't remember the guy's name again, the left back. I'd get them on a loan urgently if I was in charge, just to get them, try and get them ready as possible, or find out at least whether they probably got a chance of being ready, or whether we should just cut our losses, because we're desperate in that area for a youth player to come through. But anyway, I think we're an hour and 15. I think we've pretty much covered everything we wanted to do, talk about now. So it's just a case of waiting to see whether this improvement is going to be gathering pace over the next few games, because it will be interesting, wouldn't it, if it gets to that winter break and even if we win four out of those five games and we've clawed some points back, it could get even more exciting, couldn't it, if we potentially have got that top four place back in our sights. And if we can get a St. Totteringham's Day this season, I mean, how that'd be absolutely amazing, wouldn't it?
I think Tottenham and Man United are both going to fall away a bit more.
Oh, I just love it. I really would. I sound like Kevin Keegan now, don't I? But can you imagine if Arteta finishes above Mourinho? I mean, they thought after the first game or two of Mourinho, and they'd won the first couple of games by three goals, didn't they, I think, or 3-0, 3-1. And they were proper going for it, weren't they, then? Thinking, oh, yeah, you guys wanted him, we got him, and all that sort of stuff. I mean, if we finish above them, that would be so funny. I think that would start this decade off in a proper way, wouldn't it?
Doing his third season in the third week.
That's right. Everyone knew what was going to come. Everyone knew what was going to come, but for it to come this quick, it's just beyond our wildest expectations.
And they're paying him $15 million a year.
I know.
So if they move him quickly, if it all goes to shit, which it will, again, he's going to walk out with like bunts in his pocket.
Well, do you? If you were Daniel Levy, and you'd already seen what had happened in the first 3 or 4 weeks of his reign, would you be putting your hand in your pocket to back him this month?
No.
Oh.
No way.
I mean, that's a good question, isn't it?
Yeah.
Because he will go ballistic if he don't get backed.
Exactly.
Oh, yeah, he's done it at Man United.
And they will just try and put him up. So, oh, no, we'll wait till the summer. We'll wait till the summer. It's just, there's no value in January. And just try and get away with it and just try and get... stringing him along like they did with Pochettino.
They are proper fucked now. They've got to back him because I don't know how long his contract is. You know, they've got him for at least... I mean, you know, it's Tottenham, right? They hate the payout. They've got him for at least a season.
He signed a 3-year deal, didn't he?
Yeah.
And not only was it 15 million, but he was guaranteed to be always at all times 86 grand a week more than the highest paid player. That's amazing, isn't it? You couldn't make it up. But they think they've got the best deal. So, if we could finish above them, that'd be almost like a trophy this season. It'd be amazing. Even if we finished like this, I'll take that. We've got some Totteringham today.
Did you see that poll that they did on Twitter that got hijacked? They were like, do our best. You know, they're like, they're doing
the striker.
Peter. Yeah. I had to hold my hands up. I did partake in that vote.
I haven't seen it. I only heard about it on the Arsenal Vision podcast. We are the kings of hijacking that type of thing, aren't we, Arsenal?
Another one, it was from official Tottenham, because obviously they didn't have anything to talk about. They put this post out and it was like a graphic flicking through all of their kits, and they wanted their fans to tell us what your favourite kit is. And I'm like, is that all you want to talk about?
Fantastic. Well, let's see how it goes then, because I can only speak for myself, but I'm really excited about it. And I literally can't wait to the next match now.
Is it home or away?
Away.
Away.
Away. Yeah. And like I said, under normal circumstances, I'd be worrying about it, but because they are a bogey side.
This fixture, fixture that I ever saw Arsenal play in the flesh, it was Crystal Palace Arsenal.
Was it?
Yeah. My first ever game was Crystal Palace Newcastle, because my dad was Newcastle and wanted to get me involved with Newcastle. And then the following week, he took me back again, and it was Crystal Palace Arsenal. And that's when I actually got hooked on the team and I chose Arsenal.
Fantastic. I could bet he was chuffed to bits.
Yeah, and it was Liam Brady. It was one of his last...
Well, your dad. Your dad's Liam Brady. No, brilliant. I would love to have seen Brady play. But I started supporting in... I think it was the year he left, 1980.
Right.
I think he left the club in 1980, didn't he?
Yeah.
After the FA Cup final, I think, was that his last game, the FA Cup final?
I think it was, that was the season, that was my first season seeing him play. I think it was either 79 or 80.
Yeah. Yeah, I think, because I just missed him, because that's the season I started supporting when I was seven. So, yeah, but I'd love to have seen him play. He's, obviously, I've seen him on video, but I've never seen him live. But, yeah, great player. What a great player he was. But, yeah, anyway, I really appreciate you guys coming on. Thanks ever so much. And I hope to see you again soon. Thanks to everyone watching, Frank Gunner, Terry Mancini, etc. And happy new year to you all. And let's say, I think we could. Well, no, I ain't going to say it. I'm going to get drunk. But fingers crossed for a good win on the weekend. I mean, three on a trot. When? How long ago would that be? Blimey.
Another clean sheet.
Yeah, I mean, I do think I'm going for 2-0. I'm going for 2-0 on Saturday. I'd like to see a 3 or 4, but I'm being greedy then. I don't know, really.
I reckon we'll win 3-0, personally.
I
think we're on at the moment.
The good thing is, like I said earlier on in the show, I think I'm pretty sure I heard that they've got 11 players out and potentially even Louis Zaha. Louis Zaha.
Zaha.
I keep getting... but he's touch and go. So if he's not playing as well, then, oh my God, that'd be brilliant.
Yeah.
Brilliant. Anyway, Happy New Year to you all. Thanks again. And look forward to seeing you very, very soon. Take care. Come on, you Arsenal.
Thanks very much for listening. We really do appreciate each and every one of you. We really need your help to spread the word about From Dial Square to Wear. So if you haven't done so already, please give us a 5-star review on iTunes and Spotify. Subscribe to the From Dial Square to Wear YouTube channel and hit the notification button so you never miss a live show. And finally, please tune in to the live shows. Don't forget, you can get the chance every week to be the star alongside Andrew and his great guests just for being the most entertaining viewer on the night. Thanks again and see you on the next episode. Bye!